Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Good morning, everybody. Jill Lorenz here with my dementia show, and it's part two with Dr. Luis Medina. He is with the neuropsychology department, and you are a fellow at the University of Colorado Hospital.
So the neurosurgery department on the neuropsychology service, yes.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you. I wouldn't even have been able to get that out. I'm glad to have you back here today because I worry a lot about my caregiver nation out there, my listeners and followers, and the caregivers out there who feel a little bit misunderstood. And also, I think that we need to have some real thought processes around our cultural friends, you know, in the Black and Hispanic communities, and their feelings and the way they work with their families. And you have given that an enormous amount of thought, haven't you?
Thank you. That's a large part of the work that I do, yes.
And, yeah.
Specifically in my research, carries over into some of the clinical work that I do, but definitely in my research, it is of major concern.
So you're changing the face a little bit of how you and your department, it takes a village,
it
right?
It does, it does.
But you're changing the face of the way you work with families. Is that a fair statement?
I think so.
And the people with diagnosis or about to be diagnosed or who have been diagnosed. Explain a little bit, I could do it, but I'd rather hear it from you,
sure,
about how you're really delving into the family aspect and really looking at how can we get a really solid, good diagnosis. But let's first talk about the family.
Sure. Like you mentioned, some of these cultural groups that are largely underrepresented in Alzheimer's and dementia research, like the Black community and the Hispanic Latino community, there are so many variables at play, so many factors that we haven't completely accounted for that are related to not only differences in rates of diagnosis, so incidence and prevalence of Alzheimer's disease and dementia, but also caregiver burden and,
yes,
and those factors. And so the Alzheimer's Association puts out their facts and figures every year or every other year, and there's a whole section on that, on caregiver burden and what it means for families, since a large time or a large proportion of these underrepresented groups, their families take on the full burden, that relates to a lot of caregiver stress and burden. And there's actually a focus now from the National Institutes of Health, which helps fund a lot of Alzheimer's research.
Oh, you bet they do.
There's a call out right now for us to try to start figuring out what are some of the specific issues related to caregiving, and especially caregivers that are family caregivers in ethnic underrepresented populations.
Right. And why I wanted to have you talk with me about this today is I know especially the friends I have in the Latino community, they really don't want to talk about it outside of the family. They hold it close to the vest. And what I've been trying to do for the last year on my radio show, at least, and in my history of working with people with different types of dementia, is to make it more of an open conversation. There's no stigma to me around this. My family has this. 7 people in my family have had it. My family's being studied along our lives to see who's going to get it and who's not going to get it. And we've had the neurobehavioral exams and everything. But I don't want our friends out there to feel alone. They don't have to. They don't have to do this alone. But why do you have any idea? I'm totally putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
But do you have any idea why, say, the Hispanic culture feels like they've got to keep this under covers? They can't bring it out and talk about it.
Sure. That is a very good question, a very complicated question.
It is, and I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
Give it a shot.
One of the things that we've sort of observed, I guess, in this kind of research is that family is extremely important in the Hispanic and Latino community. There's actually a value known as familismo or familism that we see in very collectivist cultures like Hispanics and Latinos, also in Asian American cultures or Asian cultures. And what happens is that stigma has a greater, weight.
Impact.
And an impact when it comes to something that's happening within the family. There's fear of shame. There's fear of retribution or repercussions that may affect relationships within the family if we are to talk about some of these things that are going on. And so I think that that's part of it. And also, I think this notion still of this is just part of normal aging. Grandma's getting a little bit older. It's okay to lose your memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some health literacy that needs to be done in terms of increasing knowledge about what the difference is between normal aging and dementing disorders like Alzheimer's disease.
Right. I'm glad you're working with the Alzheimer's Association, my dear friend Marisa.
Yes,
Volpe, and of course Rosalind Reese have done amazing work for quite some time, trying to get more communication out there in the communities. You know, for me, I talk about it openly and freely, and even in the Caucasian community, sometimes people have a hard time talking about this out loud. But the truth of the matter is, if somebody had cancer, they had a diagnosis of cancer, we'd be all over Facebook asking someone to pray for them or something like that. And you may not know this, but my company, Summit Resilience Training, what I do is I do training for family caregivers.
Oh, great.
And I also do professional training. The Alzheimer's Association has now listed me as one of the three companies that will be approved to work with professionals out there.
That's great to
and
hear.
It's important to me on so many levels that we communicate about this in a way that is dignified. No one brought this on themselves.
Yeah.
No one brought this on.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned Marisa and Rosalind, because I'm working closely with them. We're starting in February a bootcamp translation, and so this is a a method that was started by a family medicine doctor and his group, also at the University of Colorado Hospital, Dr. Jack Westfall. And he's been working on translating medical jargon into community-relevant language.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah, and they have done it in different disorders or different diseases like hypertension, asthma, diabetes, some types of cancer. And what it is, it's engaging the community and shareholders within the community to help us medical folks really find out what are the relevant messages about a condition,
all right,
or about management of that condition or testing and screening of that condition.
Okay.
Because what we think is important sometimes is not what patients think is important or what a community thinks is important.
That's a great point.
And the words that we use may not be understood. And right, sometimes we don't assess if the person understands what we said.
And they might walk away thinking, I'm really confused, and give a message out there to the rest of the community that's not quite right. We're going to take a break, listen to a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back on this conversation.
Sure.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you'll ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Bellevue Heights believes that supporting families and caregivers is just as important as caring for our residents. We offer free monthly support groups, education and lecture series, and presentations by experts in Alzheimer's and dementia care. All of our programs are free and open to the public. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. And ask about our current and upcoming education opportunities and support groups. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, we're back, and I'm talking with Dr. Louis Medina from University of Colorado Hospital. And Louis, we've been talking about the cultural differences in our society, okay? You're changing the cognitive evaluations that you're doing.
Yes.
And you can do those in both English and Spanish.
Correct.
We're happy for our Hispanic community out there. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yes. So again, I'm trained as a neuropsychologist and also as a cultural neuropsychologist. And something that is really important to understand right now is that a lot of our traditional neuropsychological tests are cognitive tests, which we use to help diagnose dementia and also to help differentiate between the causes of that dementia or the diagnoses, are largely developed on a white population.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've observed over many years now is that those tests may not be functioning the same way in other ethnic groups or ethno-racially diverse groups,
mm-hmm.
As they do in Caucasians. And so as a cultural neuropsychologist, what I do is really focus on what are the cultural aspects that are associated with a patient's, you know, problems in case in particular, and really applying a very sensitive approach to the neuropsychological assessment with these individuals and seeing where the limitations are in the work that we're doing. Right now, there's an initiative that has stated through the American Academy of Clinical Neuropsychology that by the year 2050, unfortunately, a lot of our traditional tests that we use will not be applicable or useful in more than 60% of the population here in the United States, simply because of the demographic growth trends that we're seeing with several
right.
groups like Asian Americans, Hispanics and Latinos, and African Americans. And so,
can you explain a little bit more? You said you're looking at the cultural differences. Can you name a few? What are some of the differences?
Sure. Well, a large part of that is really just a performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, one example that I like to give is when you're told at your doctor or your neuropsychology visit to work as quickly as you can.
Mm-hmm.
What that means between cultures can vary greatly.
Oh,
so
yeah.
For people here who grow up in the United States and attend, you know, really, really arduous or really good schools, and they're tested a lot, they know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need to do this as quickly as I can, but also very efficiently.
Right.
People from other cultures, like I mentioned before, I was born in Puerto Rico. Puerto Ricans tend to have a different concept of time. It was a very long time before I bought a watch because we don't have that rush, you know. That,
right.
Yeah. And also individuals who, for instance, aren't exposed to a lot of testing. If they're coming to neuropsychology, and this is the first time they've actually ever done a standardized test,
mm-hmm.
and it's a 60, 70-year-old individual, that's very different from the 60, 70-year-old individual who did standardized testing throughout most of their education.
Life. Right. And that's true, you know, with Italian culture, with all
correct.
Kinds of different cultures,
yeah.
The time of day that they do things and the way they do things,
yeah.
Very different. You know, you said something interesting about the way that it's going to be tested in 2050. I want to submit something to you. I think right now we have a mini mental exam that basically for early diagnosis says, what's your name? Where do you live? Do you know where you are? Here's a drawing of a triangle and a circle. Turn the paper over and do that. Count backwards from 100. All right, here's my idea. I want to see what you think. I think we should change it right now to being like emojis. What does this emoji stand for? Or what does, I probably shouldn't say this, but LMAO stand for, or LOL or something like that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because that's where our culture is now. I think we're outdated right now because I've tried to point out several times that different types of dementia don't necessarily happen to the aged person. We have plenty of people who get it at a younger age.
Thank you for bringing that up. And it is something that a lot of researchers are starting to think about. This new generation that's growing up in a completely digital age, and what's
right?
that doing to the brain, and how are our tests going to operate on just the Caucasian samples that have grown up in this age, and how we're going to be able to evaluate them 50, 60 years from now? How's the brain going to change? And so there are some interesting studies that are trying to start looking at that. There are some people who are developing new tests that are using digital methods like tablet, you know, iPad or anything, and using icons and so forth. The one thing that a lot of people forget, though, with tests is that test development takes a long time and a lot of money.
Right.
And the reason is that we don't want to, just because you have a score that's below this mean or this cutoff, we don't want to give you any diagnosis or any impression that you're doing really poorly unless we're really confident in that test.
Right.
And for the instance, the mini mental took years to develop and validate. We had to develop norms for it. And then we had to test it in different cultural groups to see if the same cutoff score or suggested cutoff meant the same thing. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that a lot of times it doesn't. So yes, we would love to develop new and exciting and more challenging measures that are a little bit more applicable to our current time. But by the time people start thinking about these ideas to the point when the test is finally developed, validated, shown to be reliable, times change. And technology is moving so quickly right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that concerns me is... and we'll get back to clinical things back in your wheelhouse here in just a minute. One thing that concerns me right now is that we talked about the computers and the laptops and the iPads and all this kind of stuff. We have a culture out there right now that is not trying to retain their memory.
Correct.
And that's going to change the culture of everything really quickly in my mind.
I know clinically when I ask somebody, you know, do you know your daughter's phone number off the top of your head? And they don't. They have to look it up on their phone, where before that was something that you just knew.
Yeah. Here at Intercom, one of my colleagues here, Mike Evans, does on 99.5 The Mountain, he does a Barrel of Monkeys game. And it's about music. And I love asking professionals and even family caregivers, utilize your memory by playing the Barrel of Monkeys games. And how it works is you're driving down the street. You start with the letter A. Look for something that starts with the letter A. So I'm just kind of translating Mike's stuff here. But and Avenue. Okay. So spell Avenue. A-V-E-N-U-E. And then the last letter of that you look for something that starts with E, and it goes on and on. If you do two in a row, then it's a wild card and you can pick out anything and spell it. But we need to call 10 people a week, I think, or write out actual emails, spell with your kids, do things like that to help your memory. We're going to take a break and listen to a word from our sponsor. But when we get back, I want you to talk about some of the really cool things you've got going on at University of Colorado Hospital.
Sure.
Can we do that?
Yes, of course.
Awesome.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, I'm back with Dr. Luis Medina from University of Colorado Hospital, and you work in the neuropsychology department. Tell my listeners what you do.
I'm actually in the neurosurgery department, but in the neuropsychology service. And I'm a neuropsychology fellow trained to work a lot with general adult population, but specifically a lot of my work has to do with aging populations and also looking at neuropsychology and cognitive changes in the brain through a cultural lens.
I love that. And you were recently awarded a research grant.
I was.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell my listeners in Caregiver Nation about this.
Sure. The Alzheimer's Association is a fantastic organization, and they help outside of the National Institutes of Health. They are the largest funders of Alzheimer's research.
Absolutely.
So it's been an honor and a pleasure working with them. And my work goes back to something that we mentioned earlier, which is how a lot of our cognitive tests may not be unfortunately as useful in certain populations, which really does has many limitations in terms of things like Alzheimer's diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Hispanics and Latinos are at increased risk for Alzheimer's disease, believed to be 1.5 to 2 times greater risk. Same thing for African American population. However, some of that may be a little bit muddied by the way that folks are being diagnosed.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to address that in my research by looking at other ways that we can potentially tap into or track some of the earliest changes in the brain that are associated with Alzheimer's disease. We're looking at these measures that assess complex tasks in your day-to-day life, sort of like managing your medications or your finances, in the lab in a way that's quantified, and that we're able to relate those to early brain changes on magnetic resonance imaging or MRI, and then taking a look at our traditional cognitive tests to see how they map on, and seeing if perhaps some of these functional assessment measures may help us be a little bit more sensitive and specific in terms of the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, not just in our general population, but also to see if perhaps it may be a better tool in Hispanics and Latinos.
Okay.
And so we're currently recruiting for that, and we're looking for folks who are either healthy and normal over the age of 60, or folks who are in the earliest stages of mild cognitive impairment or early Alzheimer's disease dementia, to see how they perform on these tests, these cognitive tests, and then the magnetic or the MRI. And it's exciting to see where this research is going to take us.
Oh, I'm thrilled. When I worked with the Alzheimer's Association, one of the first things that I did was I helped our helpline translate the information that they give out to people that call in into Spanish.
Great.
I don't speak Spanish, but I had a tool that I could use, and I just worked with the national office in Chicago to help me get any information that they had that we could put into our database so that we could get more help to our friends in these different cultural avenues. And it's super important. And also, I want to point out that the helpline for the Alzheimer's Association is in 200 different languages. And that is, that's huge. That's a big step on its own, right?
And it's something that I tell anyone and everyone. It doesn't matter if you have the diagnosis or what stage in the diagnosis, whether it's MCI or Alzheimer's disease dementia, or just thinking about it. You know, I'm starting to notice some changes in my dad's memory and thinking abilities. At any time, it's never too early to call that number. And they're 24/7. They're extremely helpful. And, you know, we have our local chapter here in Denver and in other parts of Colorado, and as well as our national chapter that are really invested in that helpline.
Oh, they are. And that number, by the way, is 1-800-272-3900. Let me say it again, 1-800-272-3900. Do you have any other exciting things going on out there?
Sure. Like I was mentioning, this translation project. I'm working with Marisa and Rosalind from the Alzheimer's Association and working with the African-American community and the Hispanic-Latino community to start translating some of this medical jargon about Alzheimer's disease into language that's really useful and understandable and much more relevant by these underrepresented communities. Hopefully increase health literacy and recruitment in it.
Sure. Does that mean you might need to make sure that there's different dialects so people can understand it better?
So right now, this will be all in English. We're piloting it in a couple of months, over the course of several months. We'll be doing it in English and Spanish. The experiences of others who've done boot camp translation, which is this method of translating medical jargon, has been shown that for instance in Spanish, that you do need to have some of that cultural awareness of, you know, the particular vocabulary or dialect that's used in different cultural subgroups within the Hispanic Latino community.
One of the reasons I wanted you here today was because, first of all, you are a young man.
Thanks.
And I love that. I love the Dr. Potters and Dr. Woodcocks of the world and everything, but I'm super excited to have young, brilliant minds like yours and Dr. Breanne Betcher and some of the Samantha Holden and, oh my goodness, I could go on and on. Benzie Kluger, love Dr. Kluger, had him on a few weeks ago. And I just, how do you... How can we get younger people involved? How can we get more people wanting to work with Alzheimer's and different types of dementias? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great question because it's something that I think I still struggle with. And I think the visibility is a large piece of seeing that people of all ages are impacted by Alzheimer's disease and dementia in general. Especially in the Hispanic Latino community, we're having family caregivers who are not adult caregivers, you know?
Right?
When you have a 15-year-old son in high school and he gets home and the responsibility is that his after-school task is to take care of grandma or grandpa, while mom and dad may be working or taking care of other things, we're seeing that a lot. And so young people are affected. There are also very rare genetic mutations that cause Alzheimer's disease where folks are impacted very, very early. And part of the research that I've done over the years has looked at that. And our patients were in their 30s and 40s with very early stages.
Heartbreaking.
Up to very severe stages of Alzheimer's disease within that age range.
Right. You have been incredibly informative, and I hope to have you back on the show, and we'll talk more about
an honor and a pleasure.
New advances that you're making and all the great work you're doing at University of Colorado Hospital with your team, and maybe we'll see another PBS special at some point in time or something, but you're awesome, and
thank
I really
you.
Enjoyed
thank
having you on the show, Dr. Luis Medina. And if you need any help, please let me know, 303-999-1961, or check out my website, www.summitresiliencetraining.com. I have a lot of great information. And folks, like me on Facebook, on my Summit Resilience. I do live Facebooks where I talk about strategies and techniques for working with this disease. I'll see you next week. I hope you all have a great, great weekend. And I love my caregiver nation. See you soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more, and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.